A pivotal point, or a very important point yesterday that we covered. So because it was quite pivotal and important, I thought I'd go over it with you today, just for a few minutes, as a refresher, so that the new faces can understand. And understandably, since tomorrow's New Year's, I'm sure many people have previous engagements and could not have made it. In any case, today is very auspicious because we start off the New Year's with the New Year's Eve with Dharma. And also tomorrow we started off with Dharma again. So never again, never in our previous years or in our previous lives have we had such an auspicious occasion where we can start off such an auspicious time with the holy teachings of the Dharma. Mm-hmm. So one should rejoice that at this time one is not frivolously wasting time or going out or doing things that one has normally done and has not brought one happiness in this life and in previous lives, but at this time one has sacrificed, one has given up, one has made an effort to come to listen to the holy Dharma. This is actually in itself quite an auspicious event. And at the time when the old year is finishing, and it is auspicious in the sense that we're giving up all our old habits and our old thinking and our old ways and negative kind of acting, and we're starting on a new year with Dharma, on a new basis, on a new kind of motivation and a new kind of transformation, a new type of, how to say, way of life. So it's very, very auspicious. Today I did the extensive prayers requesting all the teachers of the lineage, all the way back to Lord Buddha, to bless us, to give us their holy, presence here, that we may be able to understand the Dharma, listen to the Dharma, contemplate on it, and therefore gain the holy results, which is full enlightenment. Again, one should not listen to the Dharma with the faults of the three pots. One should not listen to Dharma with a low motivation. The three faulty pots are the pot that is facing down, the pot that is facing up but has contamination or is filthy, and the pot that is with leaks. Listening to the Dharma with the pot facing down is like someone who comes with a closed mind. Therefore, when the pot is down, even if it's raining hard, no water can be collected inside. The second type of faulty pot is one that is facing up and open, yet is contaminated. So if you were to put the cleanest and the best of items in that pot to eat or whatever, it would become contaminated, although the pot is there, although the item is good. In this example, it is coming to the Dharma with wrong motivation. In order to listen to the Dharma to pass time, in order to listen to the Dharma because you're bored, in order to listen to the Dharma to find methods to get wealthy, to get young, to get beautiful, to just have simply a good life. That is to listen to the Dharma with a faulty pot, or with a pot that is contaminated. Contaminated motivation. Then the third one is the pot that has leaks and cracks. Whatever you listen to the Dharma, you agree upon, you like, you think it's excellent, you think it's wonderful, yet one does not practice. It goes in one ear and it leaves out the other. So one should not listen to the Dharma with the three, as an example, the three faulty pots. Then one should not listen to Dharma with a low motivation, that one may get a good life, one may get a healthy life, one may get money, one may get, a deity that will help us have long life, health, excellence, money, wealth, that we may get some practices, that we may get a good future life. We should not be listening to the Dharma or practicing Dharma with such lowly motivations. When we have such a precious jewel, when we have such an excellent jewel, we have such a method, we should aim for the highest and not for the middling or the lowest scope. That would be that all sentient beings, inclusive of oneself, is not different from oneself, that everyone wants happiness. Everyone is no different in the fact that they want happiness. Everyone completely looks for happiness. Even the tiniest ant or the tiniest insects are looking for happiness. Not anyone ever wants one moment of suffering, one moment of happiness. On that basis, others and myself, there is no difference. Others and myself, there is completely no difference, that they want happiness and I want happiness. If they want happiness, there are more of them and there's only one of me. How can I, as a logical person, forsake other people and think about only myself? How can I practice Dharma for the sake of only myself not thinking about other people. That is completely illogical. I will in fact practice Dharma for the sake of all other sentient beings who are suffering and who have not met Dharma, who do not know about Dharma, who has not heard about Dharma, who has no idea about Dharma, and therefore are ignorant of the true method to gain happiness and the true method to cessate unhappiness. So I will listen to the Dharma, and therefore by gaining knowledge of the Dharma and gaining experience of the Dharma, I shall put it into practice, into my daily life, in order that I may gain the fully enlightened state of a conqueror Buddha, like Lord Shakyamuni. Therefore, not to rest in enlightenment, but to come back again into this world, again and again and again and again, until all suffering ceases, until the last sentient being is released. For this reason, I will become a fully enlightened Buddha, therefore I shall listen to the holy teachings of the Dharma. If the motivation is such, then even traveling here in your car, going through the traffic jams, sacrificing what you usually do, sitting here in a posture that is uncomfortable to your body, thinking and focusing becomes an act of merit, becomes an act of Dharma. If the motivation is low, if the motivation is to gain higher rebirths only, in order to get more health, to get more wealth, in order to get more beauty and position and power, in order to gain friends and influences, or as a social activity, to go to the Dharma center to meet other friends. If the motivation is that, then it becomes not a Dharma practice. It becomes a worldly practice. Then the actions that you do becomes a worldly action. Therefore, not accruing the merits or karma for oneself to become a fully enlightened being. It is not the actions that you do that determine whether it is Dharma or not. It is the motivation behind the action. It is the motivation. Lord Buddha, in one of his previous lifetimes in the Jataka tales, was on a ship traveling with 500 merchants. Lord Buddha was the captain of the ship, in charge, responsible for the crew. Although he was not a Buddha, he was a highly realized Bodhisattva. Being a highly realized Bodhisattva, he had very powerful clairvoyance that can read the minds of others. While he was traveling on this ship crossing, he realized that one of the members on board had the intention of killing the other members and robbing them of all their possessions. Buddha, out of great compassion, out of meditation, out of great compassion, in order that the 498 members are not to be killed, in order for that person, the killer, or the one that intends to kill, not to gain such negative karma and to go to one of the lower realms for millenniums. Buddha generated great compassion, and Buddha himself had no choice but to kill that person. Buddha killing that person became an act of merit, became an act of Dharma, became a very powerful act of propelling toward enlightenment, because the motivation was completely pure, the object was correct, and also, the intention, faultless. Therefore, even actions that seemingly seem negative, if done on the basis of bodhicitta or compassion, will gain good results. Whereas actions that seemingly seem like Dharma, if you go to a Dharma center, if you meditate, if you pray, if you do your mantras, if you make offerings, if you buy statues, if you do charity, you help the poor. If you do these actions, but the intention or the motivation is to look good in front of your friends, to gain position and power, to move up in life, to impress, or to gain a higher rebirth, or to gain wealth, then that action in itself is not Dharma. That action has become stained, and it becomes a worldly action. Therefore, it does not equate Dharma. So when one goes to the Dharma center, one has taken refuge, one has a nice altar, and one makes offerings and does mantras and prayers, it does not make one a Dharma practitioner. It does not make one. One knows when one is a Dharma practitioner, when all of that is done without the 8 worldly concerns. Any Dharma action, in order for it to qualify it to become a Dharma action, must be free of the 8 concerns, the 8 worldly Dharmas. The concern to encounter pleasure, the concern to encounter material gain, the concern to encounter praise and fine reputation, the concern to avoid pain, avoid material loss, avoid blame and poor reputation. If you do Dharma with the motivation of gaining pleasure, material gain, praise, and fine reputation, so avoid pain, material loss, blame, and poor reputation, then you are not doing correct Dharma. Although you can be sitting in a cave, reciting millions and millions of mantras and doing millions and millions of meditations, if any of your Dharma practices, any of it is done with any of those eight worldly concerns, you are not a Dharma practitioner, and you may practice Dharma for 7, 8, 9, 10 years. You can practice it for 20 or 30 years. And if you check yourself carefully and deeply, not one single grain of improvement can you find. Not even one single grain can you find. In fact, your mind becomes lower, becomes more attached, becomes more angry, becomes more, how to say, negative, and in fact, you will start using Dharma as an excuse to cover up for your inequities, or your mistakes, or your pride, your ego. If you are practicing Dharma without those eight worldly concerns, then yearly, you should see an improvement in your mind. You should definitely see an improvement in your mind. You should definitely see an improvement in your worldly situations. If your worldly situations are decreasing and your years in the Dharma is increasing, in general, it is a very bad sign. It is a sign that you have not been practicing the Dharma sincerely and well. If you find that your mind yearly becomes more and more agitated, more and more angry, more and more hateful, more and more spiteful, more and more vengeful, if it becomes more of those, any of those delusions, you have been doing your Dharma practice wrong. It is not that the Dharma is wrong. It is not that the Buddha is wrong. It is not that the practice is wrong. It is the way that you're doing it. If you have a wonderful car and you cannot drive it, and you have an accident, you cannot blame the dealer, you cannot blame the maker, you cannot blame the car. Only yourself. Like that, Dharma is excellent, Dharma is pure, unstained, unsullied. But one must know how to practice the Dharma. And before any type of practice of Dharma, one should definitely, intimately internalize, get to know, understand what is to be avoided and what is not. And that is to practice Dharma with any of the eight worldly concerns. Any of the eight worldly concerns. If it is done with that, you will not gain results. Definitely cannot gain results. In general, any religious tradition basically has one aim. Any religious tradition, the aim is to bring about harmonious interaction and love and compassion and the betterment of society or the happiness of the individual. Any religious tradition, the reason for it is to bring about a good, harmonious, happy situation or happy society. Therefore, on the basis of knowing that motivation, any religious teacher in the past of any religious denomination has taught a particular path according to time, geography, culture, and situation of the people. Therefore, those religious teachers might have changed the words or changed the circumstances, but the meaning is basically the same. Basically the same. Not to harm, not to bring unhappiness to others, but to increase other people's happiness, increase benefit to others. That is the basic, fundamental aim of any religious practice. If a certain religious practitioner of any denomination does it wrong, or has a bad way of doing things, it doesn't mean that that Dharma is bad. It doesn't mean that particular religious denomination is bad. But that person, like an unskilled driver of a car, does not know how to practice that particular faith well. On the basis of knowing that every single religious teacher in the world of any religious denomination has taught a particular path to bring about harmony and happiness for us, on that basis and on that motivation alone, we can gain a very wonderful respect, we can gain a very wonderful appreciation, and a very wonderful, how to say, overview of any religious faith and denomination. any religious faith in any denomination is good, is excellent, because it teaches a pure path. If we want to go to KL from different cities such as Ipoh and Penang, Malacca, etc., we can take many different types of roads. We can take a rougher road, we can take a smoother road, a faster road, we can take it by walking, we can take it by riding a bike, we can take it by taking a vehicle or an airplane. How fast, how slow, and what road does not matter. As long as you are traveling on that road, as long as you are going on that road, as long as you are facing that road. Therefore, realizing the motivation of each religious teacher, realizing the beneficent motivation and altruistic intention of each religious teacher that has manifested in this world, regardless of denomination, we can gain a very deep respect for all religious traditions. All religious traditions. Any religious tradition. Not just within the Buddhist faith, but within the Buddhist sects or the Buddhist denominations. Any religious faith. On that sincere basis, on that sincere thinking, we can gain great respect for any religious denomination. And whether it is a correct religious denomination or not, is checked whether the teachings teach you to tame your delusions or not. And as I check it, most of the world religions teach us different methods for taming the delusions in our minds. We are so-called Buddhists within the Buddhist faith. Our affinity, our karma, our propensity, and our liking is within the Buddhist faith. Within a restaurant, you have many different types of foods. No need to argue what food you're going to eat. As long as your stomach is filled, you become full. Your hunger is, taken care of. So like that, there are different religious denominations, different religious teachings, and different religious methods. Within the different religions, different types of sects and methods. All are excellent, all intentions are the same. The important thing is for us to pick one. By religious methods, one can gain mental happiness. By worldly methods, one can gain some kind of physical comfort, one cannot gain mental happiness. If by worldly methods and worldly items or possessions we can gain happiness, then the more possessions we have, the more wealth we have, the more position we have, the more power we have, the happier we should become. And in fact, if we honestly check well, people in high places and high positions, people of wealth, people of power are quite unhappy, do not have free time, have a lot of health problems, have a lot of worry, have a lot of tension. Even when they die at the time of death, they cannot die in peace, wondering what's going to happen behind them, who's going to hold the mantle, what's going to happen to their hard-earned wealth, what's going to happen to their hard-earned money. Worldly people and ordinary people who are ignorant, who do not know what brings happiness, are attached to worldly things. Diamonds, cars, houses, mates, friends, position, power. Worldly people who do not know the methods to happiness are attached. Therefore, if they have a car, if they have a diamond ring, if they have a nice house, then every single day they have it, it should create better and more and more and more and more and more happiness. In fact, when we get that position or possession on the first or second day, we may feel some sort of transitory happiness, but as the days go on, it becomes a problem or source of suffering. For example, a car. We'll have to maintain it. We'll have to pay its fees. We have to make sure that it's not broken. We have to make sure that we park it right. No one hits it. We have to make sure that it looks nice. The paint hasn't cracked. It's clean. Wash it. And then when it starts getting older, if we can sell it off. These are all subtle sources of suffering. These are all subtle sources of unhappiness. Yet our ignorant mind grasps on to such an object to think that it is happiness. Yet not knowing one is suffering. Not knowing one is unhappy. That is applicable to all dharmas. All dharmas in this case, meaning all phenomena, all objects that we are attached to. Whether it be a mate, whether it be a friend. At first when we get married, our wife is very young, our wife is very beautiful, very attractive. As the years roll by, maybe she gets a little pudgy, some lines, gray hairs come in, then we start looking at other people. We start looking at other things. It shows that all phenomena is transitory. It shows that we are attached and we like things that we think bring us happiness, that we think bring us some kind of comfort. If it did bring us comfort, then from the day that we possessed and owned it, every single day, the happiness would increase, become better and better and better and more excellent and excellent. It doesn't mean you should go out and throw away your jewelry, your rings, your bank accounts, your wives. It doesn't mean that. What it means is not to be attached to it, to have it, to possess it, but at the same time, to realize that that is not what brings happiness, but those are supplements to keeping your body fit, keeping your mind in shape, so that you can look and practice Dharma, so that you can gain real happiness. You should have a good place to stay. You should have comfortable food. You should maintain and take care of yourself. If you can afford, if you're in a high position in a job and you need to have cars that are attractive to impress others, to get business or whatnot, it's all right. But to realize that that in itself is not the end. And that in itself is not good enough to justify yourself to only do that and not practice any Dharma. Oh, I must take care of myself. I must gain wealth. I must gain position. I must gain this, 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 and that, and that, and that. That is not justifiable. Everything is transitory. Everything is moving. Everything comes to an end. Again, it regenerates itself in another form. Again, it regenerates itself. Yesterday, we gave the teaching some continuity or continuum. As I spoke yesterday, I will tell you about it briefly again, very briefly again today, which is everything moves on a continuity, as spoken by the great Dharmakirti. It's very hot. I have to wear about 9 or 10 meters. It gets very hot. Everything moves on a continuity. Every single thing is continuous. It has to have a beginning, it has to have an end. The beginning is beginningless, but the end, there is an end. There is a cessation to sufferings. Like all phenomena, as I talked about, has to have a beginning. A piece of paper. It must have been pressed, it must have been at the printers. Before that, it must have been pulp, it must have been a tree, it must have been a sapling, it must have been a seed, it must have been born from a previous tree. That from a previous tree, and on and on and on and on. In fact, the lineage is uncountable, innumerable. Like that, our human body is uncountable. Our human body is innumerable. It has no end. It has no end. And it has no beginning. Right now it has no end. It has no beginning. We, our human bodies, in order for it to exist at this moment, had to have had a previous existence on the basis of logic. Our human body was existing at 8 o'clock. It has to have been around at 7. It must have been around at 6, at 5, at 4, at 3. Yesterday, the day before, last year, last month, 10 years ago, whatever. And if we were conceived at 10 a.m., as I explained yesterday, our body at 9:59 apparently was inside our parents. The red white cell, the red cell and the white cell of the father, the red cell of the mother. These two cells must have come from our parents. For those two cells to come at 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. or 10 a.m., 10 o'clock we were conceived. At 10 o'clock we were conceived. At 9:59, our bodies also had a previous moment. That previous moment was, it was inside our parents. Like that, when we trace back again and again, our parents must have came from their parents, from their parents, from their parents, from their parents, their parents, and their parents. Numerously. So much innumerable that almost uncountable. beyond human comprehension, beyond mental comprehension to be able to count how many, innumerable. Therefore, at 9:59, you left the white, the red, left your parents, and entered into the womb of the mother, and took rebirth, or how to say, took formation. You were conceived at 10 a.m. Similarly, that's where your physical body came from. Now, in order for your mind to exist at this moment, it must have been existing a previous moment. It is 8:20, it must have been existing at 8:19, 8:18, 8:17. It must have been existing at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 6. It must have been existing yesterday. You see, the mind, kichik, which means instantaneous. It moves on an instant, like this, like this, like this, like this. It moves constantly to form a continuum. The mind just doesn't exist and then goes. In order for it to have an existence at this moment, it must have had a previous moment, a previous, a continuum. Therefore, 8 o'clock, 8:01, 8:02, 8:03, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, so on, continuously. In order for it to exist tomorrow, you must exist today, the mind. It cannot just appear tomorrow. Like that, in order for your mind to exist at 8:20 now, it was existing at 8:19. It was continuous. 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, yesterday, the day before, previous month, last year. All the way back, if we go back to when we were 10 years old, 9, 8, 7, 6, when we went back to 1 year old. Then when we went back to the time where we were inside our mother's wombs, the 9 approximate months of gestation, your mind was still existing in a very subtle form. Not as active as now, but still existing. At the same time, when you were conceived at 10 o'clock, at 9:59, your mind must have existed. Come here. There's lots of room. Come up front. In order for your mind to have existed at 10 o'clock, it must have existed at 9:59. Think about that carefully. It must have existed at 9:59 and therefore existed at 9:58, 9:57, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock. It must have, if you were born on the 24th at 10, where were you on the 23rd on the 10th, the 22nd on the 10th? Now if you say to me your body came from your parents, logically correct, scientifically can be proven. But if you say to me that your mind has come from your parents, scientifically, logically, I can debate with you. Then if your mind at 9:59 was inside your parents and it came out of your parents and entered your mother's womb, therefore to create your mind, then your mind must be a perfect offshoot of your parents' mind and their thinking and their likes and dislikes. Therefore, if your parents are geniuses, are experts, good in music, you must be likewise, you must be the same. If your parents are not intelligent, you must be unintelligent. If your parents are highly intelligent, you must be geniuses. If your parents are swayed toward mechanisms or computers, you must be. If your parents are simple farmers, you must carry on and be a simple farmer. True, certain conditions, certain things that we like is conditioned by being with our parents for an extended period of time. Because we've been there with them for a certain period of time, and we have been conditioned to like this and that and this and that. But deep down inside, our way of thinking is completely different than our parents. Mostly, 99.9% of the time, it is thinking. That 0.01% that remains is coincidental. So if that's the case, we can logically debate and refute and say, if that mind was existing at 10, logically, it must have been existing at 9:59. Now then you can ask yourself, where was that mind at 9:59? Where was that mind at 9:58, 9:57? It must have existed in order for it to exist at 10. All phenomena must exist on a continuous basis. It must have had a previous moment in order for it to have the next moment. It cannot just spontaneously arise at 10 o'clock. any phenomenon, any object, whether it is living or it is not living. So where was your mind at 9:59, 9:58, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock? It must have been existing outside of that womb, in another form, perhaps another dimension. That is your previous life. So in order for you to have your mind now, in order for it to exist at 10, it was existing at 9:59, most probably in your previous lives. Carried on. Like that, if you die at 11 o'clock, whatever date in the future, at 11 o'clock, your physical body starts to deteriorate. It is deteriorating, but it will deteriorate at a faster rate, a quicker rate, a more visible rate. It will deteriorate starting 11 o'clock at a faster rate. Then, after a few months, you can say that it basically completely goes, deteriorate except for the bones, which will deteriorate again and again. It goes back into the earth. It will regenerate into another form. It will regenerate into another being. With mind or without mind. It will in fact become nourishment for another type of living being. So your body regenerates in another form. It continues into another form. Then at 11, where's your mind? When you die and you leave your body, where is your mind? 1101, 1102. Your body continues to exist in another form. Your mind also will exist in another form. It will continue. That will be your next rebirth. What determines you to take on a future rebirth? Where within the six realms of the hell realms? Preta or spirit realms, animal realms, human realms, demi gods or devas, we say in Sanskrit, or devas. Highest God realms. Not God as in Phat or Pusat. Not this kind of God. God in the sense of high worldly existence with a lot of sensory pleasures. You will take rebirth in one of these six realms again according to the dispositions and the imprints that you have collected in your previous lives. Most important in this life. And more importantly, at 11 o'clock, the state of mind that you have died in will bring up the karmic imprints that you have planted in your previous lives and this life. For example, you could be a great farmer, you could be a great farmer, and you'd be cultivating plants, flowers, whatnot. You can be a simple gardener, cultivating a flower seed. You have taken the time to put manure on the seeds, on the ground, take the weeds out, take the dirt and pebbles out to make it smooth, to make it soft, to make it pliable, plantable. And then you plant the seeds, you water every day, you protect it, you keep the dogs and cats away. Then just when the seeds are about to sprout, at that time, if you keep a good protection and you watch it well, then it will sprout strong and big. At that moment, one of your kids can come by and trample on it and crush it. A bird can come and pick it out thinking it's a worm and just kill it. A dog and cat can come around and just urinate on it and kill it. At that moment, whether that will grow or not is upon your protection. Similarly, at the time of death, although you may be a great Dharma practitioner and you have worked very hard during your life, but if your greed, avarice, anger, and hatred has not been controlled, at the time of death, if you worry, what's going to happen to my family? What's going to happen to my possessions, my position, my name, my fame? What's going to happen? And you become attached. Due to that attachment, then your previous karma that you have collected that is negative will sprout immediately. Whereas if you, at the time of death, keep a calm, pleasant, and good state of mind, focusing on the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha, or your Guru, Sipu, or any of the Dharma teachings, if you focus and you remain detached, then immediately the Dharma seeds will sprout, and you will take on a good rebirth. immediately. It doesn't mean you don't have any bad seeds. If you take a bad rebirth, doesn't mean you don't have any good seeds. It means at that very moment, the moment of truth, a particular seed that you have collected will sprout. Right now, you are all filled with karmic imprints or karmic seeds. When and how they sprout is determined on what mental activities you focus on. If you focus on negative activities and negative things and how to say harmful things, harmful seeds will come out, will open up constantly. Similarly, having a flower bed, whatever type of flower you concentrate on and how to say cultivate will grow better. So if you cultivate and you work on your good seeds, your positive seeds, therefore positive seeds will arise. While you're working on your positive seeds, then the negative seeds that have been accrued in your previous lives and this lives will become slowly purified. And there are purificatory practices. Whereas, if you concentrate on negative things, lying and stealing, divisive talk, harmful talk, harsh speech, stealing, adultery, killing, any of these actions, and you gain some kind of success, and you gain some kind of temporal or transitory happiness, if we may label it happiness, if you gain it, it doesn't mean you're doing well. What it means is, in your bank of karma, or your bank of storage of karma, the good seeds are being used up and only the bad seeds will remain. So that when you die, you will in fact immediately take a bad rebirth. Immediately, you will take a bad rebirth. It is like when we have a bank account and we don't make more money and replenish it. If we use it frivolously, over and over, again and again and again, definitely, it will exhaust. Whereas if we use it, replenish it, use it wisely, replenish it, and we replenish it more than what we use, definitely we're going to have a wonderful and lovely savings. But in this life, if we frivolously spend our good karma on taking care of our physical health, wealth, well-being, our physical and sensory pleasures, and we use the good karma that we have collected in previous lives and this life for only frivolous activities, sensory pleasures, then we are using up our positive karma and we will have only negative karma. That is why certain people are very wealthy, very successful, and very high in life. All of a sudden, they fall flat on their faces. They lose their positions, they lose their name, they lose their everything, and they suffer, and they cry, they scream, they rant out, they look for help, they become desperate. Because they have been using their good store of karma for the wrong things and not replenishing it with more positive karma. Whereas a Dharma practitioner is modest in his possessions, in her possessions, in her activities, in her sensory pleasures, in his sensory pleasures. Therefore, using very little good karma and at the same time practicing Dharma and collecting more positive karma, adding to what they have already had, replenishing and increasing. Therefore, a Dharma practitioner will only move up. And if a Dharma practitioner has more problems and more sufferings, if a true Dharma practitioner, one who really practices Dharma, have more sufferings and more problems and more heartaches, it is a very good sign. Why is it a very good sign? Because the karma for them to suffer in a deeper, more rough and harsh environment is exhausted. Example, if you were to be very thirsty, if you had the karma to be thirsty, if you had the karma, that karma is karma, if you're thirsty as a human in this human realm, in a particularly okay country, okay environment, even though you're thirsty, you suffer for a short while of thirst, then you can go out and get something to drink, ask for something, look for something, buy something. Whereas if you are thirsty and you are in a hell situation or animal situation, you will not be able to get anything for yourself. It is the same karma, but due to the environment, the suffering will be more or less. Is that clear? Does anyone have questions on that? I want that to be very clear. If you were to suffer the karma of being thirsty in a human realm, the thirst will be temporary and short and not as hard or difficult to bear. Whereas if you had the same karma in a different environment, such as an animal, or such as in the spirit or hell realms, you will not be able to take care of your thirst. It is the same karma. Like that, as a real Dharma practitioner, a good Dharma practitioner, if you get sufferings, financial disasters, disharmony, headaches, heartaches, physical discomfort and sickness, you should in fact, if you are a real Dharma practitioner, rejoice with dignity and happiness and accept your lot. You should realize that you are purifying your negative karma now. And by the blessings of the three jewels and the gurus and your purificatory practices, you are suffering your negative karma now, and therefore you will not have to suffer it in the future. For example, if you did lots of Om Mani Padme Hums and you were meant to have a car accident, and you did a lot of Om Mani Padme Hums, and you help people, and you assist, and you do charity, and you control your anger, ignorance, and desire, and lust, you control these to the best of your ability and lessen it, and practice, you still have the karma to become, to have the accident, and maybe you were supposed to break both your legs and your arms and injure your spine in the accident. Due to some purification practices you have done, you will still have the accident, but maybe break only one arm, as opposed to both your arms and both your legs and your spine. Whereas if you increase the power of your practice, you can even prevent yourself from having any broken bones, just a light accident. Whereas if you purify your negative karma even more by practice, you can even, instead of having a heavy crash, you can have just a light skid and maybe a slight dent. And if you even practice more, you may be able to purify your karma completely, that you do not have an accident at all. At all. Can affect your karma, can affect a change in your what happens to you. True. But you ultimately have to do it. They will teach you, show you, and explain. But you, in fact, have to do it. If you know you're going to have an accident tomorrow, Kuan Yin comes into your dreams and says to you, don't go out tomorrow. But you don't listen to her words. You're very excited to meet your girlfriend or your boyfriend. You're very excited to go out to a disco. And you're attached to the disco. You're attached to your boyfriend or girlfriend. And you can't let go. You ignore her advice, you get into an accident. It is not Kuan Yin's fault. She did protect you, she tried her best. Ultimately, you have to suffer the karma. Whereas from the beginning, if you have lessened your delusions of attachment, anger, hatred, if you have already begun lessening that, and then Kuan Yin gives you an answer in your dreams or a warning, and you listen, because you have already lessened your attachment, instead of going to see your boyfriend or girlfriend or to that bar or disco, you call up your girlfriend or boyfriend and say, I can't make it today, please forgive me. And then you don't go, you can avoid it. That is a very rough example. You are taught the methods. You are given the methods. It is up to you to practice. If something goes wrong, don't go wailing and crying to your teacher. Don't close up your altar. Scream at Kuan Yin, scream at Buddha, and say, why you didn't help me? That is not logical. When you do that, it may be very dramatic. Other Dharma practitioners who don't know much may think, oh yeah, that's true. But people who know the truth People who understand the workings of karma will in fact have great pity, will have great compassion and say, oh, he doesn't understand, or she doesn't understand, they don't understand, never mind. The Buddhas can work only if you agree and you try and you do it. The Lamas and the Rinpoches and the Sifus and the monks can only do something for you if you agree to do it wholeheartedly, not half-heartedly, not quarter-heartedly, not 1 or 2%, 100%. Okay, if we have to bargain, 50% for now, but at least make an attempt. These teachings are designed to take you out of suffering. It is not designed to imprison you. Just as I gave you the example yesterday, a railing is designed to protect a child from falling off over the ledge. It is not designed to imprison the child. The rules of a country, the rules of a city, rules of a house, rules of the school or institutions are there to protect the individual. On the whole, not to imprison the individual. If it is a rule or on the basis of truth and honesty, of course. It is designed to protect the individual. Like that, Buddha gives you teachings to protect you. The Dharma is protection. The real object that you go for refuge and you trust is the Dharma. When you actually practice the Dharma and you engage in the Dharma and you read, contemplate, think, and enact the Dharma in your lives, will you see a difference? If you do not enact indifference and you do not practice the Dharma, how do you expect true happiness and peace to come? If you think it is to get a higher and better job, bigger salary, expand your work, expand your fleet of cars, expand your fleet of wives, no. If that was the case, then the more wives, the more cars, the more jewels you have, you should be in continuous, non-stop bliss. And I don't think any of us are. Therefore, think about the workings of karma. Now you may think, well, I have already created this karma. I have to suffer what I have already created. I have no choice. No, that is not the case. That is not the case. There are certain types of karmas that you have which you cannot stop anymore, which already has sprouted. There are certain types of karmas that you do not have to suffer, that are yet to sprout or have begun to sprout. Begun. For example, if you are very sick, and through this sickness you are meant to die, very severe sickness and you are meant to die, and you do good practice, and you do purificatory practices, and you do, excellent practices. You do practices to purify and to collect good karma. You will still get sick, but at the same time, maybe you won't die. At the same time, you won't die. You will live. You will live, you will continue. How much you enact the Dharma and practice it in your lives, how much in the degree and the sincerity and the authenticity of your practice will reflect in your daily lives. Immediately in your attitude and your mind. Immediately. Slowly in your way of life. Because what is your physical form? Examples such as your physical form and the place you live, that karma has sprouted, therefore, you are in your particular physical form, particular shape, likes and dislikes. It's already sprouted. There's not much you can do on that. But things such as wealth, things such as sickness, things such as, an ignorant mind, these things can still be changed because the karma has not fully sprouted. has not. Why has it not fully sprouted? We can see it because the mind still can be changed. Health, we can get well. There are medicines, there are methods. Think about it clearly. Things that you cannot change because the karma has ripened, you take it with dignity, a pinch of salt, and accept with grace. And not wail out, scream out, shout out, fight back, kick and grovel on the ground, and complain about your lot to others again and again. What benefit does that bring? Whereas, things that you can change, you do something about it, but you do it the right method. If you're having financial difficulties and you're having financial problems, as an example, don't shout and scream and talk about it and advertise it. Do something about it. But do something about it on two levels. On a spiritual level and on a worldly level. The spiritual level is to meditate on miserliness and the defects and the disbenefits of miserliness. And therefore, your mind starts to detach itself from miserliness. Therefore, cutting off future potential to suffer poverty. On a worldly level, you do not do crooked business. Lie about your products, lie about your skills, lie about what you have or not done. You should pursue what you're doing in a worldly way, honestly, with effort, with enthusiasm. And then through those two methods, you can make a change in your situation. If you have problems and difficulties, and they are the result of negative karma due to negative actions, how can you again further your situation with more negative actions, thinking that if I do this and I get my lump sum of money, I will do good actions? Not possible. Illogical. Good actions create good results. Negative actions create negative results. If you have a negative result now and you perpetuate it with further negative results, hoping to get positive results, it is illogical. You cannot plant an orange seed and wait for an apple tree. And when the apple tree comes up, what happened? Excuse the term, you're plain stupid. If you do business as an example, and I apply that to all your life, anything in your life, if you do it with negative intention, negative method, or positive method, negative intention, or good intention and negative method, you will not get positive results. Temporarily, maybe you get some money. Temporarily, maybe you get some relationship or friends or comfort. But ultimately, you will suffer. Now and in your next life. So how can negative action bring about positive results? It is not logical. It has no basis. You can ask any spiritual denomination, anyone in the world who has any type of logic, any spiritual teacher, any religious teacher, any religion, if you ask, that will be correct. How can negative methods bring about positive results? How can small negative things and little bit of positive things mixed together bring about a fully positive result? It cannot. Please think about it with your intelligent, educated minds. This is not something for you to accept on the basis of faith. This is not something that is pounded in your ear to say, oh, if you don't, you go to hell. This is logical, it is clear, it is black and white. Think about it. And when you think about it, bokuna, which means if you can perceive it, then realize that is the truth, and enact it into your lives. Apply it into your lives. Immediately. Not tomorrow. Not after the next business deal. Immediately. And any negative actions you have collected from your previous lives, and in this life that you have done negatively, you do not have to suffer the results. You do not. You definitely do not have to suffer the results. Any actions that have been accrued from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, divisive speech, hurtful speech, idle gossip, covetousness, malice, holding wrong views, any of those actions based on those 10 root negativities that you have done in your life, this life and previous life, whether you remember or not, you do not have to suffer the results. You do not. On what basis? Karma is impermanent. Therefore, it can be changed. It is not permanent. All phenomenon is impermanent. Therefore, karma is phenomenon, one type. Logically, you can change that karma. You can redirect it. If we have a huge snow mountain and lots of snow, and that year unusually lots of snow has fallen and the sun has been unusually more hotter and more snow has melted. 80-90 kilometers down the mountain there's a small village which usually enjoys the river to be more, flowing or more during that season. But this year there is danger that it becomes wiped out by a flood. If those people take preventative measures, they can avoid the flood and avoid destruction. Such as they can build, if the mountain is here, the village is here, halfway down they can build, they can make trenches, dams, to divert the water around the village. Instead of that one way straight through the village, we can make one trench going this way, another river going this way, seven, eight rivers to divert the force of the river to surpass and circumvent around that village. Therefore, the village does not get destroyed. Preventative measure. Like that, the snow mountain is like your store of negative actions collected on the basis of the 10 non-virtues that I have mentioned yesterday and today in detail, and collected by avenue of body, speech, and mind. That can be averted or diverted or lessened. When your store of negative demerits, such as that snow mountain, is there and it's ready to come down. The sun is like the environmental causes or conditions. Environmental doesn't mean just your sky and all that around here. It also means the people and the way you think. When that snow is about to melt and come down and destroy the village is yourself. If you do preventative measures, you can definitely lessen its strength. Definitely, you can lessen its strength. By that, you did not push the water up. You did not dry up the water. You did not destroy or burn up the water. Evaporate it. Like that, you cannot make disappear your karma. You cannot destroy your karma. You cannot avoid your karma, like that river. Like that, we can lessen the karma, lessen the effects. How? By purificatory practices. What purification practices? Many. But all purificatory practices are based on the four powers, topshi, four opponent powers. All purification practices are based on four opponent powers. The purification practices, regardless, can be prostrations, mandala offerings, vajrasattras mantras. It can be going to holy places, making offerings to the three jewels, performing charities, etc., etc., etc. For it to have any effect, will not be at the amount that you do, where you do it, and how you do it. In order for it to have any effect, any purification practices, it must be based on four opponent powers. Number one, remorse, regret, wishing that you had not done it. to be shameful of it, and not to run parade around like a peacock and be proud of your negative actions, and be proud that you are evil, and be proud that you have a big mouth, and be proud that you fight, and be proud that you can sway people, be proud that you can buy people, be proud that you can push people around because you have some power, position, name, or wealth. To parade around like a senseless peacock, but to actually have shame, to regret, to remorse from the heart, and that regret and that remorse will be based on knowing that these actions will bring harm and unhappiness to oneself in the future again. Therefore, fearing the consequences for oneself and others, fearing the consequences, knowing on a logical, sound basis that this will come to you, and you do not want to experience it, you do not want to wait for it to come, like that silly village down there enjoying having parties and not worrying about the flash flood that's coming, and all the way to the end, jumping up and down, playing music, singing karaoke, whatever. And then when the flood comes, everyone is killed, one or two survivors sit there and go, oh, we should have done something, we should have done something. Too late. You should do preventive practices. Number one, remorse, regret. Number two, the resolve not to do it again. A deep resolve not to do it again. And if that particular action is very strong and you cannot uproot it immediately, at least to slowly and gradually uproot it. To take it out slowly and gradually. If not immediately. So, if you lie or if you scream, myself, I scream at my monks 10 times a day. I'm trying to make it 9. I'm sincerely trying to make it 9. It used to be 15, by the way. Now it's become 9, 9.5. Sometimes it goes back to 9, sometimes it goes 9.25. I'm going to make it 8. My New Year's resolution is to make my screening of my attendant monks 8. And then next year, 7. That is a reachable, that is a good, and that is an excellent goal. Not because I'm doing it, but because I don't want to be screamed at either in my future lives and this life. Because I don't like that action. But because I'm so attached, and because I'm so conditioned into doing it, and because I am not enlightened, and I'm an ordinary being, I realize that I do that. So therefore, my New Year's resolution, tomorrow morning, or tonight at 12:01 a.m. will be to scream at my monks 8 times a day and not 9. But actually, I'm going to work a little harder. I'm going to make it 5 or 4. In any case, like that, with the delusion that we have the strongest, whether it is desire, whether it's screaming and shouting, whether it's the wish to lie about a product that we have, we know is third class and we say it's first class or second class. Or if we have attachments to certain people that we know are detrimental to our lives, we should gradually lessen those actions, step by step. How? By realizing their damaging effects, number one. Number two, to know that immediately there is a damaging effect, and ultimately you will suffer because of the negative results, karma accrued from those negative actions. Therefore, number one, to have remorse. Number two, to have a sincere wish not to do it again. Not in front of your friends, smoking cigarettes and having a nice cup of wine in a karaoke bar. Oh, this year I'm going to have one affair less. This year I'm going to buy one Mercedes less. This year I'm going to scream at my wife one time less, scream at my husband one time less, just to impress our friends. And then we go back and we do it double. We do more. That is not true resolve. And no matter how fun or entertaining it might seem at the moment, when the results of those actions come and blossom, ripen, you will be in deep trouble. Deep, deep trouble. And then you will grovel and scream in the ground and cry and wail and pull your hair out and run to your sifus, run to the Taoist temples, run to the monks. That's where I get my business. So don't give me any more business. No more business. That's when you run to the Kuan Yin temples and sit there with joysticks shaking, crying on your knees, wishing for help and assistance. Too late. Too late. When you have an accident, you run to the Kuan Yin and say, please don't let me have an accident. STUPID. Not very smart. But you avoid it from the beginning. The first is remorse. The second is a true resolve not to do it again. And be compassionate even with yourself. Oh God, I didn't become a Buddha on the 3rd of January. And you jump off the cliff. You run back to your sifu, you give your Dharma books back, you give your statues back. This is not for me, it doesn't work. No, you have to understand that you've been in samsara for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. In this life, if you drink a lot of alcohol, okay, let's take another example. If you eat a lot of cake like me, you like cheesecake and black forest, and the minute you walk by a bakery, you get excited and your heart starts to palpitate because you're excited. And every time you say, okay, diet, I go on a diet, and someone brings you a cheesecake out of love, you make up excuses, say, oh yes, thank you, you're so kind. If I don't eat it, I hurt their feelings. If I don't eat it, it goes to waste. It shows a lack of strength and character in myself. So, if I take that cheesecake on a continual basis, I look the way I look now. 50 kgs heavier than I was in 1992. More health problems. And if I go on this way, I will destroy my health. Destroy it. Forget the physical appearance, which doesn't really matter, but health-wise, I destroy my precious human body. Like that, to be compassionate even with yourself and realize that in this life alone, when we have a bad habit, how hard is it to pull it out, to uproot it? How hard is it? If small habits like my cheesecake habit is so difficult to uproot, which I tell you is very difficult to uproot, and I haven't been able to uproot it and my friends are not helping me. It is so difficult. I have attachment for lasagna, cheesecake, black forest, and spaghetti. Whenever someone says, should I bring that to you? My mind says no, my mouth says yes, I don't know why. It's automatic. In any case, because the habit is so strong. It's just an example. So with small habits like that, if we cannot get rid of, how do we expect to get rid of ignorance, hatred, desire, jealousy, anger, malice, covetousness in 2-3 days, in 2-3 years? It's an illogical assumption that you can get rid of that so fast when you had that habit for previous, so many lifetimes, innumerable. How can we just get rid of it in 2-3 days? And then if we don't, we give everything back, our malas, our dharma, and we go to our sifu and say, goodbye, I'm going to the karaoke. No, it cannot happen so easy like that. Be compassionate and forgiving with yourself, but don't be too forgiving. Then you go off the other end. Next year, Rinpoche. Next year. This year is not going to work for me. I've already fallen off the cliff. No, go extreme, both extremes. The middle way. But to realize that if you shout 10 times a day, like me, you make it 9. And believe me, with training, with effort and enthusiasm and contemplation upon its disbenefits, you will definitely be able to uproot it. You will definitely be able to lessen it. I have lessened my shouting, for sure. I have many witnesses. I have lessened. Like that, I have lessened my jealousies. I have lessened my hatred and vengeance. When I was in America, if someone did something funny to me, I wouldn't speak to them for months. Not because I'm trying to ignore them, or because I don't like them anymore and I hate them. I just let them go. Now, when someone does something funny, I ignore them for a few months, a few days, but not out of hate. So let that person simmer down, and to let myself simmer down. And with prayers and hope that we can regain something in the future again. That is sincere, what I'm telling you. I am not so easy anymore to fall into those traps. It is not because I'm a Rinpoche. Oh no. Rinpoche or not, throw that label out. I don't know what I am. I know that I'm a human being with a lot of faults. A lot of pluses. The game here is to increase the pluses and to lessen the faults. And thank goodness I have Dharma to show me how. In this case, the Buddhist Dharma. The game here is to lessen those faults. So, by being compassionate and forgiving and with time and patience, even with yourself, you can lessen those activities. And you can make a promise not to do those again in the future. And gradually, you make it 8, 7, 6. Even if it takes you 50 years to get rid of your anger, fabulous. Because you will never have anger again. Therefore, you will never collect the karma that comes from having anger. Therefore, to suffer the repercussions of that karmic effect, which is to be born in a barren land. A land that is bare, that is scarce in nourishments, that is rough, that is dirty. You will avoid rebirth in that. And that rooting out of anger can be taken with you. Because the anger is from the mind. When you die, you take your mind with you. Therefore, if you take your mind with you, in your next life, you start one step ahead. No anger. Work on jealousy. Then next life, more and more and more. Eventually to enlightenment. But if you you use your precious human life with the 10 endowments and 8 freedoms that I had talked about yesterday in detail, if you use your precious human life for the accumulation of wealth, long life, friends, beauty, power and position, etc., if you do it for those reasons, because they are not associated with the mind, you cannot take that with you in your next life. They will be left behind, therefore they are bereft of benefit in the ultimate term. They are empty. So if you waste your lives 100% on these transitory, transient, temporary, elusive happinesses, when you leave, you will be very unhappy. Therefore, to focus your minds on what will really bring you happiness, which is the complete destruction of delusions. The 3 main delusions, ignorance, hatred, and desire, of the 3, if you condense it to ignorance, which is what binds us to existence, suffering, uncontrolled existence. People like His Holiness the Karmapa, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Sakya Tenzin, His Holiness the Great Akasa, Kingo Kenze Rinpoche's example. Those beings are not within psychic existence without control. They are here controlled with power, with intention, skillfully helping others out. That is a different situation. Like when Buddha took birth on this planet, controlled, with the intention to show the final enlightenment. He could have gotten enlightenment in Ganden Heaven or Tushita, but he purposely manifested enlightenment in our world. As an example, as a play for us to emulate upon. Like that, if you can gradually destroy your delusions and all its extensions, then you can definitely gain great happiness on the logical basis that when these delusions are rooted out, you will not act upon them. When you do not act upon them, you do not accumulate further negative karma. Therefore, you will not suffer the results. Very logical. That's why Buddha says you do not need to depend on an external God, on an external deity. You do not need gods and deities and spirits to help you to get to enlightenment. It is for you and yourself alone. Salvation is in your hands. On that logical basis, please meditate, contemplate, and think about that. You know when you can stop contemplating and meditating, when your attitude starts to change, therefore your actions. Don't think about meditating on naked deities with consorts, 50,000 arms, lots of heads, raffle, in the middle of fire, smoke, riding on horses, mules, chickens, I don't know what they're riding on. Don't think about meditating on these strange deities that are fat and skinny, different colors. If you do not even try for a minute to change one's own delusions, those deities are covering their mouths laughing at you. At the same time trying to be compassionate when you look up at them. Because that is not the way to enlightenment. If we can recite a few mantras, make a few offerings, do a few prostrations, wear a Buddha, an amulet, keep the picture of our guru stuck on our forehead and we can become enlightened, then we have been enlightened a long time ago. I've been doing that for years. And I'm still not enlightened. Far from it. That's my guru. I've gone for that refuge ceremony. I've gotten this initiation. I've gotten that deity. I've gotten this statue, that mala. I've gone to India. My guru is His Holiness, His Eminence, His faultlessness, His worship, on and on and on and on and on. Yet, look at us. Shameless heaps of negative karma. Untouched. Therefore, to make a commitment immediately, your New Year's resolution, your life resolution, to decrease your delusions step by step by step, immediately, based on sound backing. That is the second of the four opponent powers. And some of you are thinking, oh, do we have time for the third and fourth? Yes, we do. First, remorse. Second, to avow not to do it again. Even if you have to take small vows, if you know yourself, you go in front of Buddha, your Kuan Yin, your Sifu, your meditational deity, yourself, and your wish for happiness, if you're a free thinker, and say, from today, 9 a.m. to tonight, 9 p.m., I will not shout at anyone. And then tomorrow you shout a little. And then the next day take the vows. Then again and again and again. Gradually lessening that. I do that. I do it for 1 hour at a time, not one day at a time. I know myself. I always say, okay, from 9 to 10 I won't shout. And that's when I'm usually sleeping. I wake up at 11. In any case, all kidding aside, yes, you can take these small vows. No need ceremony, no need bells, no need hats, no need a big rinpoche and a big throne and centers. You do it yourself, you have communion with the Buddha. You sit and you visualize the Buddha, or if you have an altar in front of your altar, and it doesn't matter if it's Kuan Yin, Amitabha, or Shakyamuni, or if the Buddha is porcelain or clay or whatever. To have communion with the three jewels and say, from today on, from tonight, I will not do it. And to consciously hold it. That is it. That's the secret. No mantras, no bells, no initiation. Sorry. If you think you can sit there and think about cheesecakes and spaghettis and girlfriends and boyfriends and going out to karaoke's and celebrations and drinks, and then while you're meditating, you see a nice lady, you walk by and go, the mantras is not going to help you. It's not going to help you. It's not going to do a thing. Then you put the mantra in a tape recorder and play that round and round, and you can just take a nap. You get enlightened, I hope. And if you do come back and see me, I'll try it. That is not the way to make, even if you're brave, weekly commitments, monthly, and increase it to yearly and increase it to life. Be practical, be forgiving, be compassionate, and be simple with yourself. and know your limitations. If your limitations are great, wonderful. And don't shout tomorrow morning, I made this commitment, and then fail and look stupid in front of your friends. Be it a real communion, a real commitment. Number three, to do purificatory practices, antidote practices. Any antidotes, such as Vajrasattva meditation, the 35 confessional Buddhas meditation, taking refuge, etc., etc., prostrations, mandalas, mandala offerings, Vajrasattva, 35 confessionals, Gong Sha. Any of those practices, visiting holy places, serving your teachers, any of those purificatory practices will help to purify the already accumulated karma. Then, number four, the last of the four opponent powers, the last, is to do the opposite, to do the opposite of what you have been doing. Instead of shouting, speak softly. Instead of having anger, practice patience. Instead of being attached, slightly detach. When you see people that bother you and drive you crazy, force a smile and then go away and don't say. If you usually like to gossip about people, lessen it, stop it. If you are used to upgrading your products and you know they're the lowest grade, stop it. You may get a little money now, but later you'll be suffering poverty. Look out into the world. How many people are poverty stricken and how many people are actually wealthy? The ratio is quite a big difference. Quite a big difference. To do the opposite actions, developing compassion, to read Dharma books with a good motivation, to take refuge, to do meditations, to listen to the Dharma, to contribute to the Dharma emotionally, physically, financially, any way that you can sincerely. If you do these four opponent powers, and you apply that to any Dharma or purification practices, definitely, surely, and steadily, you will become purified. And you will get the signs and dreams of purification. For example, in your dreams, you will have signs such as washing your gurus, washing a Buddha statue, vomiting, walking up a mountain, seeing the sunrise, seeing the moon rise, or coming out of quicksand, coming out of a deep pool. You will have these signs and very. Therefore, to focus your minds on what will really bring you happiness, which is the complete destruction of delusions. The three main delusions, ignorance, hatred, and desire, of the three, if you condense it to ignorance, which is what binds us to existence, suffering, uncontrolled existence. People like His Holiness the Karmapa, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Sakya Tenzin, His Holiness the Great Akasa, Pingo Kenzi Rinpoche's example. Those beings are not within psychic existence without control. They are here controlled with power, with intention, skillfully helping others out. That is a different situation. Like when Buddha took birth on this planet, controlled, with the intention to show the final enlightenment. He could have gotten enlightenment in Ganden heaven or Tushita, but he purposely manifested enlightenment in our world. As an example, as a play for us to emulate upon. Like that, if you can gradually destroy your delusions and all its extensions, then you can definitely gain great happiness on the logical basis that when these delusions are rooted out, you will not act upon them. When you do not act upon them, you do not accumulate further negative karma. Therefore, you will not suffer the results. Very logical. That's why Buddha says you do not need to depend on an external god, on an external deity. You do not need gods and deities and spirits to help you to get to enlightenment. It is for you and yourself alone. Salvation is in your hands. On that logical basis, please meditate, contemplate, and think about that. You know when you can stop contemplating and meditating, when your attitude starts to change, therefore your actions. Don't think about meditating on naked deities with consorts, 50,000 arms, lots of heads, wrathful, in the middle of fire, smoke, riding on horses, mules, chickens, I don't know what they're riding on. Don't think about meditating on these strange deities that are fat and skinny, different colors. If you do not even try for a minute to change one's own delusions, those deities are covering their mouths laughing at you. At the same time trying to be compassionate when you look up at them. Because that is not the way to enlightenment. If we can recite a few mantras, make a few offerings, do a few prostrations, wear a Buddha, an amulet, keep the picture of our guru stuck on our forehead and we can become enlightened, then we have been enlightened a long time ago. I've been doing that for years. And I'm still not enlightened. Far from it. That's my guru. I've gone for that refuge ceremony. I've gotten this initiation. I've gotten that deity. I've gotten this statue, that mala. I've gone to India. My guru is His Holiness, His Eminence, His faultlessness, His worship, on and on and on and on and on. Yet, look at us. Shameless heaps of negative karma. Untouched. Therefore, to make a commitment immediately, your New Year's resolution, your life resolution, to decrease your delusions step by step by step, immediately, based on sound backing. That is the second of the four opponent powers. And some of you are thinking, oh, do we have time for the third and fourth? Yes, we do. First, remorse. Second, to avow not to do it again. Even if you have to take small vows, if you know yourself, you go in front of Buddha, your Kuan Yin, your Sifu, your meditational deity, yourself, and your wish for happiness, if you're a free thinker, and say, from today, 9 a.m. to tonight, 9 p.m., I will not shout at anyone. And then tomorrow you shout a little. And then the next day take the vows. Then again and again and again. Gradually lessening that. I do that. I do it for 1 hour at a time, not one day at a time. I know myself. I always say, okay, from 9 to 10 I won't shout. And that's when I'm usually sleeping. I wake up at 11. In any case, all kidding aside, yes, you can take these small vows. No need ceremony, no need bells, no need hats, no need a big rinpoche and a big throne and centers. You do it yourself, you have communion with the Buddha. You sit and you visualize the Buddha, or if you have an altar in front of your altar, and it doesn't matter if it's Kuan Yin, Amitabha, or Shakyamuni, or if the Buddha is porcelain or clay or whatever. To have communion with the three jewels and say, from today on, from tonight, I will not do it. And to consciously hold it. That is it. That's the secret. No mantras, no bells, no initiation. Sorry. If you think you can sit there and think about cheesecakes and spaghettis and girlfriends and boyfriends and going out to karaoke's and celebrations and drinks, and then while you're meditating, you see a nice lady, you walk by and go, the mantras is not going to help you. It's not going to help you. It's not going to do a thing. Then you put the mantra in a tape recorder and play that round and round, and you can just take a nap. You get enlightened, I hope. And if you do come back and see me, I'll try it. That is not the way to make, even if you're brave, weekly commitments, monthly, and increase it to yearly, and increase it to life. Be practical, be forgiving, be compassionate, and be simple with yourself, and know your limitations. If your limitations are great, wonderful. And don't shout tomorrow morning, I made this commitment, and then fail and look stupid in front of your friends. Be it a real communion, a real commitment. Number three, to do purificatory practices, antidote practices. Any antidotes, such as Vajrasattva meditation, the 35 confessional Buddhas meditation, taking refuge, etc., etc., prostrations, mandalas, mandala offerings, Vajrasattva, 35 confessionals, Dongsha. Any of those practices, visiting holy places, serving your teachers, any of those purificatory practices will help to purify the already accumulated karma. Then, number four, the last of the four opponent powers, the last, is to do the opposite, to do the opposite of what you have been doing. Instead of shouting, speak softly. Instead of having anger, practice patience. Instead of being attached, slightly detach. When you see people that bother you and drive you crazy, force a smile and then go away and don't say. If you usually like to gossip about people, lessen it, stop it. If you are used to upgrading your products and you know they're the lowest grade, stop it. You may get a little money now, but later you'll be suffering poverty. Look out into the world. How many people are poverty stricken and how many people are actually wealthy? The ratio is quite a big difference. Quite a big difference. To do the opposite actions, developing compassion, to read Dharma books with a good motivation, to take refuge, to do meditations, to listen to the Dharma, to contribute to the Dharma emotionally, physically, financially, any way that you can sincerely. If you do these four opponent powers, and you apply that to any Dharma or purification practices, definitely, surely, and steadily, you will become purified. And you will get the signs and dreams of purification. For example, in your dreams, you will have signs such as washing your gurus, washing a Buddha statue, vomiting, walking up a mountain, seeing the sunrise, seeing the moon rise, or coming out of quicksand, coming out of a deep pool. You will have these signs, and very clearly. Very clearly. That, I can guarantee you. When I don't say that I'm so purified, I'm so excellent, I'm far from it. But when I was in Ladakh, North India, and I was doing some purification practices, I had a dream that His Holiness, the great Sonamji, came. This is one of my root gurus. His Holiness, the great Sonamji, came to my room, and I got a bucket of water, and I was washing his feet. And I was washing it with lots of love and care. And I was washing it, and I dried it, and I put my head toward it. And then I woke up very happy. And I asked my other teacher, who was with me, His Eminence Drigung Rinpoche of the Kagyupa sect, and I asked him, oh, you know, I had a very unusual dream. I didn't know you had these signs. I said, what does that mean? He says, oh, your purification practices are taking effect. This I share with you to share with you. This is not to tell you that I'm a teen. I have a lot more karma to purify. But because of those purification practices, I can tell you a lot of sicknesses that would have come to me have been avoided. And the sicknesses that have come to me have been very less. And the degree is less. And also, when I take certain medicines, it takes effect. Purification practices work. It must be done with the four opponent powers. If the four opponent powers are applied, and you do the purification practices, you will be able to purify your negative karma. You will be able to collect new karma, good karma. And if it's dedicated for bodhicitta or enlightenment, it will become merit. There's a difference between good karma and merit. Merit is what propels you toward enlightenment. Karma, good karma, is what propels you toward a good rebirth in this life. It's different. Merit can equal both. Karma cannot equal both. Merit will give you a good life, good situation, sustenance, friends, family, position, power, etc., 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 etc. And those accessories, if I may, will help you on your journey to enlightenment. Where is good karma, not merit, that is collected on the basis of false motivation, wrong motivation, will give you good wealth, good happiness, life, family, high case status, etc., etc., but will not propel you to enlightenment, but in fact bring you down in samsara. For example, Mother Teresa's wealth and position and power and standing in the world, in fact, propels her toward enlightenment. And enlightenment, all the gold cups are in your hands. Do you see the difference between merit and good karma? There's a big difference. Don't mistake yourselves. Therefore, it behooves us to make a very good motivation before any Dharma talk, any Dharma action, any prostration, meditations, practices, pilgrimages, meeting our Guru, in fact, any charitable actions before we do, we should develop an extremely good motivation. Therefore, that action will affect the collection of merit, not good karma. A result of good karma is someone who is very wealthy and rich and just gives away to show friends, to show how wealthy they are, how their position is. And they do it, the act is good, but the result will be birth in the human realm in the future. Yes, again, with some sort of wealth, or as a god with some sort of wealth, but that wealth will pull them down. They can be born into a family that's very wealthy, but they experience beatings, sufferings, abuse. They can be born into a wealthy family as a little French poodle, getting wonderful food, getting a lovely bath, getting your fur trimmed. You can be born into a wealthy family that does not take care of you. You can be born into a wealthy family and enjoy wealth for a few years and die. Or you can be born into a wealthy family where you are excluded from inheritance. Wealth, a charitable act, does not equal charitable results. Charitable or good motivation will equal good results, enlightenment, regardless of the action. Like a mother scolding her child out of love, as opposed to me scolding my monks out of anger. Both is scolding. The motivation is different. Therefore, the results will be completely different. It's very logical. It's not the action. Therefore, one must apply the four opponent powers. Remorse, the resolution not to do it again. Antidote, any antidote application, such as vajrasattva, such as prostrations, mandalas, purification practices. Number four, to do the opposite of what you have been doing. For example, to do charity, to have compassion, to meditate, to study. In fact, to substitute your time of negativities with your time, of positive activities. That is very basic. That is very fundamental. That is in every religious faith. Therefore, I told you in the beginning of this session that every religious faith is fundamentally the same. Now, what is left is for us to do it. Today, all of you know. Today, all of you are in sound mind and health, and you can hear it, and you can absorb it, and you can understand it. It is up to you to do it. It is up to you to apply it. Therefore, salvation is in your hands. Now, yesterday, we talked about the 10 negative actions. The 10 negative actions. Now we'll talk about some virtuous karma and its result. There are two types of karma: throwing karma and completing karma. Good throwing karma leads to a rebirth in one of the higher realms, and good completing karma to a happy situation in that realm. Good throwing karma leads to rebirth in one of the higher realms, human, demigods, gods. Or if you want to use Sanskrit, humans, asuras and devas. Asuras are demigods, or half the status of gods, between humans and gods. Humans, asuras, and devas. D-E-V-A-S-A-S. Asuras, A-S-U-R-A-S. For example, the condition of a human who continually suffers from illness is due to that person having good throwing karma and bad completing karma. He had good throwing karma that threw him into a rebirth as a human, but yet as a human he cannot fulfill his complete human potential due to the completing karma which created him to be sick constantly. If bad throwing and completing karma are combined, they lead to rebirth in the hell regions. A bad throwing karma and a bad completing karma. The situation of a pet dog who is fed and treated well is a result of bad throwing karma, but good completing karma. A situation of a human that is poverty stricken is a result of good throwing karma and bad completing karma. A human that has his five senses intact, that is relatively well fed, that has all he needs to sustain his life and practice Dharma, is a result of good throwing karma and good completing karma. That is actually a very, very rare event. Example, without any pride or prejudice, how many people have attended a Dharma talk? The result of very much good throwing karma, but the completing karma is not there. Why? Because the Dharma actually teaches you the true methods to the cessation of suffering. In order to hear it, you must have throwing karma, completing karma, and merits. And merits. Especially merits. Like that, restraining oneself from the 10 non-virtues is essential in developing skillful means and wisdom. If one is able to refrain from the 3 mental vices, those of the body and speech and mind, if one is able to refrain from the 3 mental vices, those of the body and speech will be easily avoided. If you can avoid the 3 negative mental states, the vices of the speech and mind, our speech and body, will be easily controlled. It is the mind. If one's mental activity is under control, it is good to live in a populated place, for this leads to love and compassion, because you have the opportunity to practice love and compassion with people who are not loving and compassionate. Further, for Further, such an environment offers a situation in one's anger may be aroused, thus giving one the opportunity to apply the four opponent powers and to develop the virtue of patience. But without this mental control, it is better to live in seclusion. The beginner is like a rabbit and his delusions like an elephant. So his remedies for delusions are very weak. If one lives as a town dweller, it is important to check one's motivation before going out and watch for the craving that arises when one walks through the town. The fruit of unvirtuous acts, in which there is both intention and fruition of the act, must be experienced unless the four opponent powers are applied. However, if there is an act without intention, the person need not experience the karmic fruit of that act. There are further three types of karma. Tongchi, Ryugyugi Le, or karma of which the fruit is experienced in this life. The second is karma of which the fruit is experienced in the next life. And the third is karma which is to be experienced in the next several lives. In order to attain higher states of existence to help others, the following eight qualities are very beneficial. All good karma, all good actions, all positive actions are based on the 10 avoidance of the 10 non-virtuous acts which we have talked about yesterday in detail. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, despicable speech, hurtful speech, idle gossip, covetousness, malice, and holding wrong views. All suffering can be destroyed on the basis of just those 10 avoidances. Those 10. How simple and beautiful. How wonderful. How basically easy Buddha has given us the methods. Because by avoiding those 10, the mind becomes calmer, negativities do not accrue anymore, and what has been accrued becomes purified. Number one, restraint from killing and helping others out of their troubles, such as being a doctor or a nurse, is a cause of long life. If you have long life, this enables one to attain one's goals and to help others. One needs a long life in order to take full advantage of the fully endowed human form, so it is important to take good care of one's body. Number two, patience and such acts as repairing religious paintings, statues, temples, and so forth. This will enable one to gain the karma of getting a pleasing physical appearance. People are immediately attracted to one whose appearance is pleasing, thus such a person is in a better position to offer help. Number three, humility, overcoming one's pride and respecting one's elders and other people in general, will result in birth in a race or caste which is highly regarded by society. Others listen to such people, whereas they might ignore a low-caste person, even one who is very wise, in general. Number four, the act of charity and making offerings will result in wealth. This can be used to help others as people require food and clothing before they can learn and practice the Dharma. Number five, restraint from the four unvirtuous acts of speech. Lying, divisive talk, idle talk, and karsa, harsh speech, harsh talk. Restraint from these four actions of the speech will give you the karma in your future and now to always be truthful. Therefore, this increases one's effectiveness in one's speech in guiding others. When one speaks, it will be pleasant. People will listen. People will respect you. People will like hearing your voice. And in general, you will gain a very pleasant, bell-like, clean, strong voice. that is very pleasant and melodious to hear when you restrain from acts of speech. Beautiful voice, pleasant voice, voice that reaches others, that touches others, that can change others, that can guide others, that is respected by others. This is the type of speech you will get, like His Holiness the Dalai Lama, whose voice, regardless, not even the words, just the tone of it, brings tears, because it's so beautiful. Or some singers, who when you just hear their voice, it brings pleasure. It is the result of restraint of the four unwholesome acts of speech, just as I've mentioned. Number six, combining humility with the use of one's power to the fullest extent for the benefit of others. Prayers to the triple gem for obtaining a fully endowed body, and these eight qualities in the next life are also a cause of power and fame. Combining, having humility is the direct result will be to gain power and fame in your future life. And now, in fact, a person with these attributes has a greater influence over others and thus can effectively bring about changes for their benefit. For example, a king can cause monasteries or stupas to be built. Number seven, helping the poor and weak by doing for them what they are unable to do. Not hitting any living being, even one's pet animals, is a further cause of having a capable mind and body. That will helping the poor and the weak, the sick, the disabled, and not hitting others, and not abusing others' bodies, will result in a healthy, able body and mind in your future life, and in this life, in fact. Which such a person can follow the instructions of their guru, and by attempting and achieving goals which others would not strive for, attain enlightenment in one life. Number eight, rejoicing in the triple gem, having reverence for others, and reciting the Manjushri mantra. This will result in having very strong willpower. Willpower that cannot be diverted, pushed off its goals, or easily manipulated. To have strong willpower, having this, one will be content while following any practices, and you will even have the ability to live in a cave alone if necessary to do your practices. If you have strong determination in getting a girlfriend, if you have strong willpower to get a good business, that is not a positive sign. That is in fact a negative sign. It is a sign that you will increase your delusions. When you are afraid of meditations, you are afraid of seclusion and caves, and you are afraid of these places, it is a sign that in your previous lives, you did not rejoice in other people's good deeds, in the triple gem's good deeds. You did not have reverence for others, and you, in fact, have not had respect for others. Therefore, it will result in a lack of strong willpower toward the true activities that will benefit your life and future lives, others, and eventually your enlightenment. Having strong willpower in the correct sense, you will be content and happy with practices and events that come along, and you will not be influenced by worldly advices, worldly people, gossip, and talk. You will be very strong in your determination to practice. Even if your teacher says, go into a cave, go into a retreat for 1 year, you will say, I will do so. When the teacher says to you, come to a Dharma talk, go into retreat, do this meditation, recite that prayer 1 million times, and you think of every excuse that is existing not to do it, it shows your lack of willpower in the correct sense of the word. But when your teacher says, go get a good job, fix yourself up, go get a nice boyfriend, before he finishes sentence, you're out the door, that is the wrong type of willpower. That is willpower toward delusion and delusional activities. These eight are not necessary for the attainment of enlightenment, but they do make progress faster and one's act more effective. Having them is like traveling from point A and B on a goat cart or an automobile. So these eight results are not the aim of practice, But by the avoidance of the 10 non-virtuous acts, 4 of speech, 3 of mind, 3 of body, one could accumulate the karma to attain these 8 positions: long life, a pleasing physical appearance, birth in a high society, high race, wealth, to be truthful, powerful, famous, healthy, able body with strong willpower. These will help you and supplement you along your Dharma practice and to bring others onto the Dharma. So if you're born in a high caste, naturally you will be respected. To be born with a good, pleasing physical appearance that is good to look at, nice to look at, but does not attract other people's desires, but to attract, to have charisma. When that people see you or hear you or are with you, they are attracted and spellbound by your dharmic charisma. Not to have a pleasing appearance that bring desire onto the other person, that is a wrong type of charisma. But to have dharmic charisma, to attract others just by appearance, to look different. Just by seeing you, someone says, hey, that person looks different. What is it about them? And by that way alone, you can bring them. By that way, one method to bring it onto Dharma. To have wealth, to use it for the sake of growing and benefiting others. To always have good speech, pure speech, pleasant speech. To have power and fame that you can influence others onto the good path. To have a healthy and able body and mind so that whatever one wishes to do positively, one is able. To have strong willpower that you cannot be pushed off the path regardless of whatever people do to you, how much beating you get, how much scolding, how much people make fun of you or taunt you or tease you, or how everybody in the world, your society and people are saying you're doing a wrong thing, yet you have strong will and determination from a very young age to do it, and you know it's right, and you do it, and not to be thrown off regardless of the obstacles. Is a result of rejoicing in others' merits, and especially the triple gem, having reverence for others, and also meditation upon Manjushri. Any of those factors. Those are not what we want out of Dharma practice. They will be a byproduct of our Dharma practice. They will be a byproduct. They will come without asking for it. Therefore, you do not have to create or dedicate your merits toward achieving long life, health, wealth, power, fame, beauty, position. You do not. You dedicate it toward enlightenment, and those 8 qualities will come naturally. Like a lake in the summer monsoon rains, it will swell up naturally without expectation. Therefore, it is always very beneficial to have an excellent motivation, to dedicate it to the Supreme of the Supreme, enlightenment. And on the basis of the avoidance of the 10 non-virtuous activities, coupled with the 4 opponent powers, that is Dharma practice. That is the real Dharma practice. Without that, the initiations, the mantras, the meditations, everything is useless. It's useless. So if your Dharma practice consists of rolling your malas, rolling your rosaries, having a beautiful altar, giving gifts to the Sangha, if it consists only of that, you will get some benefits by the power of the 3 jewels, but it will not be the benefits that will be lasting, which is enlightenment. It will be temporary benefits, such as some sort of wealth, fleeting happy state of mind, fleeting, short. Because the power, the object that you have done this in relation to, has the power to grant that. So virtuous karma, in order to take full advantage of these 8 qualities that one can attain, one should pray that they will benefit all creatures. That is the motivation. Does anyone have any questions? Today we have gone into karma. strongly. Yesterday, we talked about previous lives, how they exist on a logical basis. Today, in the beginning, I have gone over it with you. This will strengthen your already maybe strong or non-strong belief in reincarnation. At least in your society, in your culture, in our cultures, in our Eastern cultures, we have a strong belief in reincarnation. Or we've heard of it, we've been exposed. Or our grandmothers have told us, and on that basis, we've just believed it. But yesterday, I have given you a sound, irrefutable basis to contemplate on reincarnation. Today, we have talked about the workings of karma. Remember, refuge, true Dharma practice motivated by the wish to free others on the basis of the 10 avoidances, the 10 non-virtues, coupled with the 4 opponent powers. This is Dharma practice. This is the core, this is the essence. If this is done, then meditation, mantras, initiation, making statues, making religious artifacts, helping the Sangha, sponsoring Rinpoche, sponsoring monks, sponsoring monasteries, sponsoring centers, will bring true benefit, will bring not karma, but merit. Think about it carefully. On these 4 bases, if you do any Dharma practice, you will gain results quickly. I hate to use a cliche, but it's not the quantity, it's the quality. It's better to recite 1 Shakyamuni mantra or 1 Om Mani Padme Hum with remorse, regret, a vow not to do negative actions, and to do antidote actions such as compassion and meditation, and to avoid the 10 non-avoidances, to do 1 Om Mani Padme Hum on those bases, than to do 1,000,000 Om Mani Padme Hums without those. And that is the truth. Enlightenment is not from your mouth, it is from your mind. So if the mind is not developed, how can the mouth affect it? It can supplement it if it's coupled with the right mind. From today on, I beg you, I implore you, I ask you, I request you, with folded hands and on my knees, that all of you take these teachings to heart. And from today on, make a change in your lives. To change your attitude, even 0.01%. From today on, from the teaching on, not to leave the teaching on a shelf and brag how beautiful it is, how wonderful it is, and how you received it, and how excellent it was, etc., etc., to put flowery praises on it. But to actually enact it and use it and do it. Therefore, your purpose of coming here today, my purpose of coming here, and all the people who are involved in my coming, in small and great ways equally, will be benefited. That's how an affinity with people, lamas, and teachers, and Buddhas, and Sangha that you like will become stronger. When that affinity and karma becomes stronger, your negativity will lessen. Because the definition of a spiritual friend or guide is one that when you stay around them, your activities of positive will increase and your negative activities will decrease. That is the definition of a spiritual friend, which is Guru, Sangha, your Dharma brothers and sisters, etc., etc. When you hang around these people, when you stay around these people, you notice with time your negative actions decrease and your positive actions increase. That is the definition of a spiritual friend. You want to have affinity with these people. Now, tomorrow will be New Year's. In 2 hours and 10 minutes time, it will be New Year's. I'm sure most of you will be awake still. Have communion with the three jewels. If you are another religious sect, fine. Have communion with Muhammad, with God, with Jesus. Have communion with the God of Israel. It doesn't matter. But have communion with them. And say from today on, I will avoid the 4 negative actions of speech, 3 of the mind, 3 of the body. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, 3 of the body. 4 of the speech, harsh speech, divisive speech, gossip, idle talk. What is the 4th one? Can anyone volunteer? Schismatic or divisive speech, isn't it? Then the 3 of the mind, covetousness, malice, and
wrong view.
That is your New Year's resolution, not to get a new diamond ring, or to get to England, or to get a relationship this year, success or bust. No. Your resolution should be to avoid those 10 non-virtuous actions to the best of your ability, and not for 1 and 2 days and you go back to yourself, but to continuously do it again and again and again and again until you root it out, therefore bringing happiness to yourself and to others. That should be your New Year's resolution. If you begin that and you start that, everything will change for you. People around you will like you. They will like you better if they already like you. Your mind will calm. You become happier. And if you decide to engage in the tantric practices, you will be able to efficate enlightenment at the most 16 lifetimes. At the least 1 lifetime. 1 meditation. He is able to. Therefore, to appear in whatever guise, form, shape, color, size, time, place, object, animate, inanimate, in order to benefit you. And we don't know if our neighbor or our friend is a Buddha in emanation or not. Don't look at them for face value. Do not look at them for face value. We do not have the wisdom and wisdom eye or clairvoyance to see who is an emanation, who is attained, and who is not. Do not assume that that person is not attained simply on face value. It is very dangerous in that way. Make your New Year's resolutions clear and strong. Start your Dharma practice New Year's Day in 2 hours' time. Start it. Begin it. Regret. Have remorse. Promise not to do negative actions. Do purification practices. Do practices that do collect merit on New Year's, on, from then on. Avoid the 10 non-virtues. Nobody's asking you to sit in a cave and meditate on some deity with 50,000 arms that you can't even visualize. You can't even count his hands, forget visualizing. No one is asking you to go to India and hang out in some monastery and shave off your head. No one is telling you to remove your clothes and hang out in the woods and rub ashes all over your body and run around naked in the rain. But someone, the Buddha, is asking you to avoid the 10 non-virtues, to apply the 4 purification practices for your own benefit. If that is hard, have a good time in samsara. I'm getting out. And if we're very sick, if we're very sick, it's scary to go to the hospital to get poked on, to get cut, to get needles, to get examinations, exposed to radiation, get our hair all fallen out. It's scary to hang out and don't know what they're doing to you and what's going to happen. It's definitely scary. But how scary would it be if your disease progressed and you don't go to the hospital? Yes, it's scary and difficult to avoid the 10 non-virtues. But how scary would it be if you continue in your acts of the 10 non-virtues and the results come? How scary would that be? Think about it. No one is asking you today to do anything out of your abilities or your intellectual capacity. Think about it. Make your resolutions the correct resolutions. It is the time. It is right. You are not too old and you are not too young. The great Mahasiddha Dandipa lived about 1,000 years after Lord Buddha. He was a carpet weaver. He expanded his business very widely because he was very hardworking, industrious, and he made wonderful carpets that he got the greatest patrons, the richest people in town. Even the kings started patronizing him. His carpets were the talk of different cities and different towns and different districts in his country, in India. When he got old, he lost his ability, he lost clear vision, the nimbleness of his hands, everything. And he could not do it anymore. He passed this knowledge and ability on to his four sons, who were equally as industrious, equally as smart and hardworking as their father, and respected their father and mother with grace, with dignity, and with deep love. And they worked at their business very successfully, and it grew more and more, even bigger than their father ever had done in his life. In the front of their shop, they had displays where they had displayed their carpets and samples. In the back is where they were. And then way in the back was a garden where they actually had a jasmine garden. And their quarters, living quarters. They had a big compound. Then